This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined as always by Bradley Chambers. Tonight we have one sponsor for the show, that's Jam Software, and we'll tell you more about them as the show goes on. Bradley, how are you doing?
I'm good. First show on a new Mac. That's always fun.
All right, new Mac, do tell.
I do. Okay, so maxed out 13-inch MacBook Pro Retina.
Mm-hmm.
And what is sad is that if you go to about this Mac, it is an early 2005 model.
2015.
Sorry,
15. That would be very upsetting.
Yeah, that would be like, wait, too old of a computer. So 3.1 gigahertz, Intel Core i7, 16 gigs of RAM, 1 terabyte drive, but Retina display. So the thing I've noticed the most about it is my external monitor is complete garbage.
Yes, that Retina has that effect, doesn't it? You have to throw away everything else that you own.
So, no, it's fantastic. It's a great computer. I had already had an external Force Touch trackpad, so I'm fairly used to that. But yeah, great computer. Not too much heavier than my Air. But overall, I was really amazed how great a Time Machine Restore was. That's the first time I had done that in, gosh, years. And the only thing I had to do was sign into or locate the Google Drive folder. Why does it just check the default place? I'll never know. Sign into Dropbox and authorize like App Store purchases. So especially when the app, you know, every time I launch a new App Store app, I have to like sign into my account. Why I can't do that just once, who knows? But overall, super smooth. Everything else, say even stay logged in. But one of the things that happened this week that does affect our delivery is the new MacBook and MacBook Air upgrades. So I had to order like 35 of the current model MacBook Air. Upgraded to 256 gig storage, 8 gigs of RAM. Well, now 8 gigs of RAM is standard.
Okay.
So I am currently like kind of working with Apple on what to do there. It's different because it's a lease, and so you kind of have to work with the leasing company.
Yeah.
To because like Apple Financial Services is basically for all legal purposes a separate company from Apple. And even so, like I have to like send out I had an email from a lady saying like when you have your basically your last piece of gear, you need to fill out this form and send it to me so we can bill Apple.
Right. Okay.
And so it's like they're having bill each other internally.
So the situation you were in was basically that you had an order in flight while the thing that you were about to get delivered was being changed.
Actually, the order hasn't even shipped yet. It's funny that like I got an email last week saying it was delayed until the 21st. And I was like, that's weird because that's like not that common. It's...
Now you
I
know
wasn't
why.
Buying like 35,000 of them. I was buying 35 of them.
It wasn't your order that was breaking the system, right?
Right. And so clearly they were knew something was up. So I don't know. We're working on that. But one nice thing about it too is I have two Thunderbolt ports, so I can finally use Thunderbolt to Ethernet.
Okay.
And so that's nice. And then, of course, I have 11AC Wi-Fi for the first time.
Nice.
So, and I have 11AC in my office on the 80 megahertz channel because I'm far away from most of the APs in our building. So I just crank up that channel and I can get, you know, I basically, even on Wi-Fi, get our ISP speed. So I did a speed test and was hitting 400 by 400, which is our speed.
It's pretty cool, isn't it?
On Wi-Fi, it's not bad. That's kind of crazy.
Yep. I had two devices delivered this week. do you remember how I ordered two device enrollment iPads?
Yes.
And then I had to immediately put them into the field because we got new kids in the school. Well, I managed to order two more, which I can have. Actually, I've secretly kept. Nobody knows I've got them now. and they're locked in my cupboard, and I've been playing with DEP. I had a weird problem, actually, where my Casper suite stopped talking to the Apple DEP server, which meant that these two iPads, I couldn't add them to my Casper suite. And it was kind of a weird situation because it said can't connect to the Apple, this URL at apple.com to get the list of devices. This was the message I was getting in Casper. So what I had to do was there's a server key and then that you put into the DEP portal and then you get a token from the DEP portal that you put into your MDM, which is very much like the way volume purchase works. You connect your MDM server with a token file. So I just had to regenerate both of those and re-upload each to the other place and they started talking again. But it was kind of a weird day. And of course, I couldn't really do anything with the iPads until they were set up. But it was quite interesting because when the devices were not assigned to my MDM server, they basically behaved as if they were not in DEP. And that was quite an interesting thing just to learn because I wasn't really sure what would happen there. I was worried, you know, because my MDM server wasn't working properly, was I going to just be like unable to set these devices up? But in fact, when because DEP is like two steps, right? So you have, in the Apple portal, you assign your serial numbers to your MDM server, one of potentially many MDM servers. And then in your MDM server, you sort of you assign each serial number or multiple serial numbers to what they call a pre-stage enrollment, which is like a it's like the prepare tab in Apple Configurator, basically. But because I hadn't assigned these devices to any server yet, they basically set themselves up just like they were standalone iPads, which was useful because I could then set them up and start them running and so on. So I was having to think about, and this is something you're probably going to think about as well, Bradley, how to... We've talked in the show before about how to do, like, when you get devices delivered, how to do a quick test and so on. And I was trying to work out, is it possible to do, like, the most basic kind of enrollment possible? And I figured out that what I could do was just skip everything, basically. And I could make it that in three steps, I could go from a shrink-wrapped iPad to an iPad that was activated and ready to test. And it was really cool because you could just go click, 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 and you were done. And the iPad was up and running. You didn't have to go through any other screens. And that's kind of what I'm going to do for my first pass to make sure that nothing's broken out of the box, is just to put them all into a very, very basic enrollment. And then what I'll do is I'll change the enrollment that they're assigned to and then put them into the full enrollment with, where they'll then be set up correctly for the users.
You know, maybe think about a conversation that we had with number one friend of the show, Fraser Hess, mm-hmm. where he was, you know, one of the discussions we've often had is like about getting devices on the Wi-Fi automatically without having to enter in a key, because the MDM configuration profile will have that key in it. And he had a great idea. I'd not thought about it. If you've got a device that supports the Lightning to USB, you could do Ethernet. You could then dongle. I mean, that's a lot of adapters to buy, so it's more like just thinking out loud. But that's an interesting way to think about it. Like you could like say have a switch in your like deployment area. You're plugging these things in, and they would download all this information off of Ethernet, and it would potentially be easier on your Wi-Fi.
That does work. It certainly does work. There's a bit of I've certainly seen that used in schools where the people trying to set up the iPads don't have enough control over the Wi-Fi. But they can get things on the Ethernet without too much bother. That's also a good technique, and this is something that people might want to have on hand, because you've seen the situation sometimes before where an iPad kind of goes into deep sleep mode and it comes off the Wi-Fi, and somebody's forgotten their passcode, and the iPad won't come back up on the Wi-Fi until you unlock it, but you can't unlock it until you get on the Wi-Fi so that you can push a clear passcode command from your device management server. Well, one way to kind of square that circle is to plug it into an Ethernet adapter connected via a USB to Lightning port. And then what you do is you can send that MDM command over Ethernet before the device wakes up on the Wi-Fi, and then you can unlock it, and then you can get it up on the Wi-Fi and get it sorted out. So it's quite a useful kind of last-ditch attempt, if you like, to get something working on iPads like that.
Yeah, I never thought we'd ever see Ethernet on iPads, but like I can see places where that's actually useful. Mm-hmm. I really can.
I mean, that's actually been possible for a long time. This technically worked before, but the thing that's different now is that the powered USB to Lightning adapter means that you don't have to plug the Ethernet adapter into a powered hub first, because that was always the trick, was you would plug the hub into the iPad and then you'd plug the Ethernet adapter into a powered hub. But now you don't need that. You can just go straight with the powered adapter.
So it's basically, it's always possible now. It's just it's a lot more practical now.
Yeah, it doesn't require a powered hub just to connect one USB thing to your iPad anymore, which is pretty nice. Yeah.
Well, that's something you should probably have on hand for deployment day. Just, you never know. You never know when you're going to need that, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. It's something just to have. I don't know that you would necessarily... You're not going to activate 500 iPads using a single Ethernet adapter, but for occasional last-ditch troubleshooting efforts, it's good to have one of them around just in case.
So as we continue on, this is the last episode of our Deployment 2016 series, and if you're new to this series today, we have been kind of walking through over this entire year all the steps that we would recommend you take as you think about your deployments, and from very high level theory down to practical, getting your iPads on Ethernet discussion. And so we if you go to outofschool.net, we have a link to our Deploy 2016 series where you can look at all those kind of right in a row. But you want to start at the beginning. So today, to finish up, we've really, at this point, you have thought through all your planning and you have rolled out devices. And so now you're sitting there and everything's working. And so now the final question is, how do you measure success of a deployment? Is it just that things work, or, you know, do you have to go back to your goals and say, okay, these are our goals. Here's where we're at. And from a technical perspective, you may have different goals than someone who is in school leadership. So if you're just like the IT director and your only job was to make all this stuff work, then your job is done. But how do you measure when things are done? And so first thing you have to do when you look at measuring success is you must define what success is for your deployment. So some things that, you know, I wrote down that it could be success is the Wi-Fi works. You know, you're on day one of school. The kids all have the devices. It's still up and running. You're not getting calls. It mostly works. Number two, your MDM works. Apps are able to be deployed. Like, all those moving pieces work. So especially like if you're in a heavy technical position, these are key indicators for you that what you have done is working.
Yeah, absolutely. And if one of the big aims of your deployment is to sort of modernize the IT infrastructure of your school, I mean, which is a perfectly valid goal, I think, and is one that a number of schools come to iPad looking for a way in which they can, you know, take a step forward. You know, there's some schools who've got quite old fashioned IT infrastructure. They want to basically skip several generations and go to the latest things. Perhaps a lot of the success criteria are around about, you know, do we now have the internet, for example? I mean, I've been to schools where their move to mobile is really their first impetus to get the internet into the school, for example. Other schools, you know, maybe the goal is more teaching and learning. The goal might be more to do with equality or equity in the school, different things like that. But for whatever rule or for whatever goal the iPads have been brought in, you can start to derive some metrics from that and look at what is success for you. It might take time, though.
Yeah. It's not something that's going to... I don't think you can, like, you know, August 15th, first day of school, or whenever your first day of school is, it's going to be hard to define success for the entire deployment, because you almost have to wait for a year or two after it starts to be able to say, like, okay, we're accomplishing the mission we set out to do. And another thing is that the technology is being used. For a lot of deployments, that's half the game is actually being used. If it's not being used, you're certainly not meeting your goals.
One way that I like to look at that is I just look at the stats on our Wi-Fi network, and if I see a large number of devices coming on the network every day, you know, that gives me good confidence that people are turning these things on, they're using them, you know, and they're putting traffic through the network and so on. And if I don't see that, I'm kind of like, well, why are these people not, you know, using their iPad, for example? And one thing I did today, just I was doing some work on trying to size our new deployment and how big a device do we need and so on. And what I looked at was I pulled down stats from our MDM server about how much data was being stored on devices. This is one of the kind of metrics I use for not exactly success, but certainly are we actually actively using the devices and what we're using them for. And it was quite interesting because I found there was a kind of dip in a couple of year groups where they had created less data than other groups. And another couple of groups further up the school had increased their usage quite a lot, which was very interesting because previously in the show I've talked about how the amount of storage being used in the school was a sort of bell curve where the middle year groups, the middle school group, were the most creative users, and then it dropped off in both directions. And what I've been quite pleased to see is that the upper school, the senior school, is actually, that curve has started to rise on the right-hand end, so that our senior kids are starting to do more creative things with the iPad. I slightly suspect that what it is they found out how to cache Spotify on their device. I'm not sure. And I discovered, thank you to the BBC app, for one of our kids in school has got 4.5 gigabytes of storage eaten up by the BBC News application. So I don't know what's going on with that, but that seems like a bug to me.
You know, one of the things too, when you're looking at success, is you also need to define what success is not. Success in a technology deployment is not in increased test scores, higher test scores, because it's, if you've got issues at your school that are causing very low test scores. And again, not saying that test scores are the be-all, end-all of school success, but it's just an indicator. Technology is not going to magically fix those. It's an aspect of that, but it's not going to magically fix them. So if you've got, you know, I'm just throwing out a number here. If you score a 5 out of 10 on a test, an iPad deployment is not bringing you to a 10 out of 10 the next year.
Yeah. No, it's something I've noticed quite it's been quite marked, I think, over the period where we've been doing iPad, that iPad doesn't transform the lives of children who find school difficult. I think that's fair to say. What it can do is it can give them alternative routes to success if your assessment scheme supports that. But in situations where your assessment schemes, your exam systems don't support the use of technology for alternative ways to express your knowledge, then the iPad really can't help in those kind of situations. And I think that one of the things I'm kind of left with over, you know, 6 years now of doing iPad in school is that a sense of frustration, I suppose, at the way that our exam system isn't capturing everything that is happening with iPads in schools. Because what I see are one big measure of our success is when pupils come to our school from other schools, how hard they have to work to come up to speed to our pupils is something that is increasingly very, very marked. I'm not saying everybody, but certainly in many, many cases, children come from other schools, and I'm not saying these are not good schools and they're not good pupils, because they are able pupils going to what we call good schools, but they just haven't had access to this kind of technology, and they haven't been in a culture where this, the not just the pace of work, but the level of kind of, is even insight the right word? I'm not sure, but like the kind of higher level, higher order thinking, I suppose. You know, what we do routinely is like a big special project in their last school. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, we just, you know, throw off, like, I'll just give you an example, right? I started an advanced presentation skills class this week with kids who are 10, 11, 12 years old. And what we do in there is actually harder than what you have to do with PowerPoint when it comes to like an exam grade class where you have to do work in PowerPoint, which they will actually come to 4 years from now. I can just throw out a task like, right, we're going to do a 20 slides in 20 seconds presentation, right? You've heard of that kind of technique where the slides move on. I can just throw that at them. They can, in one period, they can pick a topic, they can split it up into 20 chunks, they can start to build it, and they can just, they're just analysing at such a high level that it's quite interesting for me to watch that. And I notice, I watch children who have come into that class, not struggling intellectually with the problem, but struggling with the skills to break down those problems into smaller chunks so they can do them. You know, I can throw a very big chunk at our kids and they will handle it, whereas kids who are not used to working in that kind of way will struggle a little bit to kind of approach a large problem like that. And I don't really, you can sort of hear, I don't really have the words to express what I'm talking about right now, but to me that's always been a measure of success that isn't captured on spreadsheets and doesn't show up in league tables and test scores, is what the way children's thinking has to change when they come into a highly technological environment like our school. And it's something I'd be interested to kind of look at more if I could figure out a way to do it, you know, to see, you know, what is the induction process for kids coming into our school from other schools.
Well, that's a great point. And it's hard to explain because it's not something you can put on a spreadsheet. It's in some ways, it's not a feeling, but it's an observation of difficulty coming into this type of environment.
Yeah.
It's like if you're like doing a marathon training, and someone who hasn't trained can come in like 2 weeks before your marathon and mm-hmm. and run your training plan with you, maybe your training plan is not hard enough.
Yeah, it's kind of like they've got, you know, I suppose when you're at school, right, you only have so many tools in your toolbox, right? You've got textbooks, you've got worksheets, you've got lessons from the teacher, PowerPoints, whatever. But when you give children an iPad, suddenly you give them an enormous toolbox of things that they can use to make or express their learning or research or analyze. And, you know, I suppose what it is, at some level it's maybe like a bit tool selection or something like that. The fact that these children are experienced users of 15 to 20 different tools, you know, maybe a digital notes application, Safari, presentation tool, word processor, art packages, audio recording, video editing. You know, they've got all these tools, and they're very, in a very sophisticated way, choosing amongst all these tools to solve whatever problem is presented to them. And that's the thing that I think is maybe that's the best way to express the difference, is that they're much more sophisticated tool users than children who have only had, you know, pen and paper and a book and a couple of other things. Maybe that's the way to describe it. I really don't have the correct words to describe it, but I hope I can express what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Another thing I would caution is defining success as happiness. Mm-hmm. Again, defining, you know, I guess ultimately it would be based on just feelings. You know, like, I feel like we're doing a good job, or I don't feel like this is working. Because those, you know, things, you know, feelings can be fleeting.
Yeah, and sometimes we call happiness engagement in schools. Like, I've seen kids who, you know, they love having an iPad, but are they actually learning any more than if they didn't have the iPad? I'm not so sure. Other kids, I've seen them get an iPad and do amazing things with it. So happiness is a tricky one. I mean, I'm not going to come out here and say, like, children should not be happy at school. That's not what I mean. But I suppose one thing that is where I would measure happiness is, are your staff happy with it? Because I'll tell you this, the entire education world is full of teachers who are just constantly furious at the IT situation they find themselves in, and really, really frustrated. And I honestly think that the general IT situation in education is causing a recruitment and retention problem with teachers. Because if you think about the way that, you know, people who are, let's say somebody who's 25 or 26, who maybe just graduated out of university, the technical world they've grown up in, and then you're asking them to step into a school where the USB ports on their computer don't work, they're not allowed to download any apps, they're only allowed to use a desktop computer that's is running Windows 7 or whatever, and they're not allowed to do anything to it, and all those kind of things. You know, is that something that people are going to be happy with? I wouldn't be happy with it. I wouldn't want to work in a situation like that at all. So I'm concerned about that, more for staff than for students, although I like kids to be happy at school as well. But there's many factors in happiness at school, and technology is only one of them.
I think the recommendation here would be to focus ultimately on what you can measure. Again, you know, this is where having properly set goals in the beginning is important, because if you don't have properly set goals, you really have nothing to measure.
Expectations and choosing the right metric are two sort of important things there. Like, I've seen some schools where they've brought in technology and they said, well, this is all about bumping up our test scores, right? And we're going to double our test scores if you just let us buy iPads or whatever. And selling your deployment in that way is very, very risky, because if you don't deliver, then there's a chance you might not get your funding renewed, and it's going to be hard to deliver that, quite frankly. But the thing that, for me, like, as a school manager, if you like, is whatever metric you choose to measure is going to go up. Right, and this is kind of something that I really believe about metrics and data in schools, is that whatever you measure goes up. So it's not about the measurement, it's not about the managing the metric, it's about, at the very beginning of any process of change, you've got to choose the correct metric to measure so that you get a good outcome. Because you could measure all kinds of metrics, there's all kinds of data floods off of what children do at school. I mean, you could measure one metric like attendance, right? Now, if you have an attendance problem, then yeah, that probably is the right thing to measure. But the risk is always that you just pick something that's easy to measure and you turn that into the metric that you're going to focus on, and then it goes up. And in some ways, the risk about these kind of plans is that you actually succeed, but that something else was more important all the time.
Well, I've heard it said, when you build your education system to do something, don't be surprised when it does it.
Exactly. You know, your system is perfectly tuned for the results you're getting. And this is the tricky thing, I think, and sort of the annoying thing about a lot of kind of conversation and rhetoric about technology and education is that even people who are like enthusiastic about educational technology will sort of stand up at conferences and events and they'll say, well, of course, you know, technology will never should never be the center of education, or they'll make some statement that sort of deliberately pushes technology to the periphery of the educational process, and they'll make that claim that of course the teacher is always central, or the teacher is always the most important thing, or technology can't replace great teachers. And people, I always say to people who say that, I say, well, technology can't replace a great teacher. That's true. Are you sure that all your teachers are in that category? Are all your teachers great teachers? I'm not sure that's true for every teacher in every school in the world. Technology can't replace great teachers, but maybe it can replace mediocre teachers, or maybe it can make up for them in some cases. I know it's not very popular to say that there are mediocre teachers, but honestly, you know, there's got to be somewhere, right? You know, the law of averages suggests. So I find that frustrating because, like you said, Bradley, your system is designed to do something. Don't be surprised when it does it. And our system, despite all the technology that is in many schools, and you know, even in schools that aren't one-to-one, there's a lot of technology in those schools, our system is still getting more or less the same results. And we're getting, you know, plus or minus a few percent here and there on different scores and, you know, people going to university and things like that. But we're not seeing radical transformations in outcomes for anybody yet. And I think that's a problem.
Yeah, and it's a difficult problem to solve, and a piece of glass is not going to solve that ultimately.
No, but the internet might.
Yeah.
I mean,
especially going back to mediocre teachers.
Well, if you think that you're handing over to the student basically a portal to all of the world's knowledge, and I have seen this with my own eyes, that if you give a student who is bright and interested in the world an iPad and an internet connection, what they will come back with will shock you, because they will take it and it's like rocket fuel for their brain. However, if you have a child who is not very able or just not interested in the world and all they want to do is play video games and watch TV, then an iPad is an amazing tool for playing video games and watching TV. And it's not transformational for them. And I think at the end of 6 years of doing this, my big question is, how do I turn people who are not interested in the world, not engaged, don't really care, how do I turn them into people who are excited and interested about the world? And people listening to this will be fuming probably and saying, well, that's always been the point of education. And I hold my hands up and say, yeah, it probably was, and maybe I didn't realize it before until I could see with my own eyes the difference when you give people the same tool in the different way that people use it. But at some level, that's actually the game, is how do you switch people on to be excited about just the world, the things that happen, people, and how do you get people to care? And maybe that's just the fundamental question, is how do you get people to care about learning new stuff? How do you change their mindset?
How do you get people to care? That's like a good kind of, like a good question to ask in like a brainstorming session at a faculty meeting.
It is, and I suppose one of the problems is, should everybody care about the same things? Like, how is it that the set of things that we teach in school are the things that everybody should care about? You know, and that to me is another sort of source of frustration, is that there's plenty of socially and useful things that people might want to learn and want to do, none of which appear in the school curriculum. I was reading an article today where a company that had done a data analysis of all the open vacancies in Scotland were saying that the biggest vacancies were in financial services, social care, and something else, which I can't remember. And I was thinking, you know, well, those things are just really not taught in schools. You know, we don't teach people how to work in a care home in school. We don't teach empathy skills. You know, we don't teach caring skills. Those are things you leave for college. They're just completely absent from the school curriculum. You know, and it's a very rare school that will have an economics course, for example. we don't have an economics course. When I did economics at school, I went to the only school in the town that did economics, and kids came in buses from other schools to do economics in our school because we were the only one that did it, and that was, what, 30 years ago or something? Not quite that many, 20 years ago. So it's interesting, you know, that those are the skills that society wants, and we're busy trying to make everybody into a computer programmer. So what are you going to do? I don't know.
Yeah.
Demand and supply is hard. But what I do know is that planning it is just only going to make it worse, you know. Planned economies just don't fly.
I think, you know, as we think back over this entire series, as we, you know, kind of do a wrap-up, if you're not going to listen to the rest of it, this is the only show you're going to listen to. You know, how can we kind of wrap this up in a way that gives you some nuggets to take with you? I think the most important thing in 2016 is getting the ownership model right. And when I say the ownership model, I mean you need to own them. I can't think of a reason technically why you would want to do a bring-your-own-iPad program, because every seemingly every new feature that's going to make your life as an IT administrator, as a school administrator, as a teacher easier requires supervision.
Yeah, and if you want to supervise, you've basically got to own the device. I was thinking about this recently, and the thing is, like, there might be reasons financially for you to do a bring-your-own-device program, but what's really important is that if you are going to do that, you have to understand on day one what that limits you to in terms of configuration management, app deployment, supervision, control, all those things. I mean, if you think about, for example, if you've got a bring-your-own-iPad program in place, you can't use Apple Classroom, for example. It's just not going to happen. And you may have teachers knocking your door going, hey, when can I get this Apple Classroom thing set up? And the answer is never, because you can't supervise the student devices. So bring your own device is fine if you're willing to basically have it like a university situation where you can't have any control and all you've got to do is like give out a list of apps that people have to get themselves. But if you want to have any kind of control, any kind of management of the device, you are really going to have to own it. And that's, I think you're absolutely nailed it there.
Going, you know, kind of going further, that a reboot of your deployment mid-cycle is two things. It's very time-consuming, mm-hmm. and you lose a lot of credibility.
Absolutely. And this is something that can happen when you go into a deployment not having enough understanding of the techniques of deployment. So I was helping a school recently where somebody had come and set up their devices for them. And then the head teacher, who I knew, sort of phoned me up and he's like, would you just sort of come and do a sanity check on this before we roll it out? And I got there and none of the devices, the school owned these devices, but none of them had been supervised. There was no Apple configurator workstation in place. There was no, they had been enrolled in free Meraki, but they hadn't, they weren't able to really do anything with it because of the problem that none of them were supervised. So I was like, well, yeah, you know, you could put these out, right? And the teacher was asking me, well, can we stop the kids doing this and can we stop the kids doing that and so on? And I was like, well, you could if you'd supervise them, but because they're not supervised, you can't do any of that stuff. So what we ended up doing over the course of the last couple of weeks was just doing a complete reboot of their deployment, where we got a Mac, got configurator. I set up a number of blueprints for them so that they could go ahead and just set up the devices and roll out the apps and get them enrolled in NDM and so on in a way that they could actually do the restrictions that they wanted to do. So that was tricky. And they're under a lot of time pressure to get something done before the end of the school term now, because they're kind of like a pilot deployment. So that's a tricky situation to be in, and you don't want to find yourself in that situation too often.
Yeah, because that'll affect your, you know, a lot of this goes, you know, the ownership model goes into your kind of app deployment model on getting that right. Another thing I would recommend is, or advise, is your infrastructure. If that is poor, nothing else matters. Doesn't your ownership model doesn't matter? What iPad you bought doesn't matter. If your infrastructure cannot handle the load, that's something you've got to make sure is right.
Yeah, that's another one. In some ways, you know, what we're talking about in terms of deployment, many of those metrics that you mentioned at the start of the show, Bradley, about apps are being deployed, MDMs are working, and so on, that's just basic hygiene, right? These may be metrics of success for your IT team, but they're not metrics of success for your overall deployment. They're just the absolute bare minimum you need to have a competent deployment that works. That's not to say it's easy. It's absolutely not easy. But having achieved all of that is just so what, you know? And then it's the job kind of comes after that, if you like.
Yeah. What else?
Setting expectations, I think, is a big thing. You know, in some ways, I think this is actually the thing that I'm best at in my life, is setting people's expectations correctly for what I'm going to do and what I'm not going to do for them, or what I think can achieve or can't achieve. And I think one of the pitfalls of deployment is setting expectations incorrectly. And I've seen it done both ways, where people set expectations too high. Like I mentioned, you know, we're going to double our test scores when we get iPads. I think that's very, very, very risky. But also setting expectations too low can be a problem too. And I've seen this happen in situations where schools have, you know, they've given out iPads, they've not really given a lead on what they expect to happen with the iPad and so on and so on. And that actually is just, in some ways, just as bad, because you never actually achieve the culture change that you were looking for. And I suppose that's really, you know, to close out the series, that's something I would point to, is realize that this, although we've given a lot of information about deployment in this series, we're doing that because that's the thing that, quite frankly, schools are quite bad at. But in fact, the real job comes afterwards, which is to change the culture to achieve those higher goals that we were talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's ultimately, you're trying to reinvent what your school's goals are and how it operates. And so if you don't, you know, after, if you look back at the end of your deployment and you don't feel like your culture has changed at all, I mean, that is going to be a kind of a key indicator.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the question of, you know, sort of where do we go from here with this is really that you've got, if you've done what we've suggested, you've got essentially what I think is the best technology deployment in the world. I don't think right now you can do a better technology rollout than one-to-one iPad in school. But the question after that is, what do you do? What's next, right? And I've been trying to answer that question for sort of 5 years now. One of the jobs is to keep on top of the world. I mean, this is something else that we, you know, maybe this is like the prologue, or sorry, the epilogue to the series, is, you know, keeping up with Apple and keeping up with the world, moving to new deployment programs, new deployment techniques as they go along. I mean, if you're still syncing from iTunes right now, either you're in a country that doesn't have volume purchase, or you're out of date when it comes to the sort of US, UK kind of deployment techniques that we have. But more and more and more, it's all about embed. And that's the work of years. That's not the work of 3 weeks before the start of term, when you do all your deployment heroics and unboxing and MDM work and so on. It's the work of years. It requires hand-holding. It requires, in some cases, it requires enforcement. But the culture change has to be the ultimate goal that we're looking for. And it's a tricky thing to do, and it's not easily scalable, but it is, and it's something that has kept me at Cedars over all these years, is I'm as interested in that aspect of the deployment as I am about, you know, moving to a school where I could roll out 5,000 devices, or a university or whatever. That would be fun too, right? But I'm as interested in deploying 100 for the third time as I am about deploying 5,000.
Yeah, I'm as excited about this summer as I ever have been, because I feel like I'm not like having to work around anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be a fun summer for me.
Yeah, no, there are so, I mean, I was remarking about this to somebody the other day, that the tools that we have now for iOS deployment are so good, and the number of hooks that we have into the system are so good that it's as good as it's ever been. And I imagine that the biggest part of my summer is going to be unboxing. Like, the time it takes to open the boxes is going to be the vast majority of the summer. My goal is to get to a point where, you know, the deployment is essentially zero touch, if I can get it there.
Yeah, I forgot to mention at the top of the show that I did get my iPads in. And So 16, yeah, they told me 60 boxes, but it had been 16. I think they mistold me. So 16 boxes of iPads, 10 in the box, chargers separately as always, delivered by two guys who drove all night from Chicago, and they were in a white van. So kind of creepy, but
it's like something like Blues Brothers, isn't it?
Yeah. So they're behind me. We did get them. So yeah, they're in, and I'm just leaving them in the box until like the Apple school manager and stuff like that is all ready to go. Figure just mm-hmm. Let's just leave them in there until I'm ready to actually get through all this deployment stuff.
Yeah, Apple school manager still hasn't opened up to UK I got an email saying that it was going to sometime in April, but it's not opened up yet, so still working that.
Before we finish up, let's thank our sponsor for today, the fine folks at Jamf Software. Jamf is your key partner for MDM for your iPad deployment. I can't recommend them enough. I was able to add 4 years of Jamf to my lease, so you can lease that with your Apple products. They support all Apple products, iPads, Macs, Apple TVs, iPhones, really anything you got. They have a neat app for teachers called Casper Focus. It allows you to kind of do some things with your deployment, like distribute iBooks and initiate AirPlay. So, again, you can either host it yourself on your own server, or they'll host it for you as well with their cloud server. Check them out at jampsoftware.com to learn more about the Casper Suite and the Casper Focus app. That's jamfsoftware.com. Thanks to Jamf for sponsoring this week's episode.
Okay. So that is the end of Deploy 2016. We are there, Bradley. We've made it.
We have. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We're going to take next week off, just take a break for a week to recover from a tough quarter. And I think you are traveling next week.
I'm not recovering from anything. I'm going on a school trip next week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I was thinking, yeah. Why are we taking next week off? So yeah. Come back.
I need a week to recover after I come back.
when we get back, I have a long discussion. I want to talk about the online admissions and application process we did this year, how we really overhauled how we did everything online with admissions and re-enrollment, and get some interesting discussions about that. So we'll talk about that when we come back here in 2 weeks. So again, thanks for everybody for listening to the series. We appreciate it. We had a lot of great feedback. Share it with your friends. Share it if you go to a conference and there's a class about deployment. We'd love for you to share information about it. Share the link. And again, thanks to everybody that's ever listened to the show. We certainly appreciate it.
Okay, so you can connect with us on Twitter. We are Fraser Spears on Twitter, and I'm spears.org on the web.
I'm Bradley Chambers on Twitter, and I'm on the web at chambersdaily.com. Have a good week, everybody, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.